we observe a moment of silence as we invite God to come and guide us and give us his wisdom in our work. Thank you. Well, good morning, honorable members. Indeed, we all from the weekend. I missed all of you. That's fine. But good morning also to the representatives from IPAL Education, National Treasury, and all other civil society representatives and stakeholders who are here. Thank you very much for showing interest in our work. I would also want to welcome the staff members and thank them for arranging that we sit in this meeting this morning. Presently, we are busy with the public hearings. So today, we had to meet so that we can receive a submission and inputs from our stakeholders on the 2018 Division of Revenue Bill. I am told that the only stakeholder that responded to our invite is Equal Education, but we have advertised and we've invited the broader community to come and make submissions. But thank you very much for coming. It could be that Division of Revenue is a bit maybe too technical for them. I'm sure we'll see more people coming to make submissions on the appropriations bill. So which means we have a challenge of having to go out there and educate our broader community about the division, the importance of also looking at the division of revenue. It's our role, public participation and public education. Well, as we would also know, the allocation of resources to the three spheres of government is a critical step in the budget process. Everything starts there. Required before national government, the 9 provinces and 257 municipalities can receive their own specific allocation. This is all part of South Africa's open and accountable budget process. So the Constitution makes provisions with regards to public participation in legislatures in sections 59, 72 and 118. But also public participation is Parliament's core business. Hence, this is a stage that we would not skip even if we wanted to. It is an obligation to also look at or to ensure that this stage is also considered in the budget process. The intention of public participation provisions in the Constitution is clear: to influence government policy outcomes so that they reflect the will of the people. Therefore, a vibrant civil society and citizenry plays an indispensable role in a democracy. So to assist in ensuring that we have a vibrant civil society, we have to also do the education, we have to educate the broader society about the Division of Revenue Bill. Parliament provides a national forum for the public consideration of issues and facilitates the involvement of the public in the legislative process. Your inputs and efforts are most valued and appreciated. Therefore, with these few words, let's engage and let's have a free, open, and robust discussion. Free, open, and robust discussion. I thank you. We'll then move on to apologies. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and guests. We received 3 apologies for today's meeting. First one is from Mr. McLaughlin, who is attending public hearings with the Standing Committee on Auditor General. Mr. Gwabaza has a family emergency. And, sorry?
Shall we allow you are protected?
And Mr. Gwabaza has a family emergency, yes, and then Mr. Paulson also apologized. I think he's also attending another meeting. Thank you.
Honourable members, do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Thank you very much. We will then move on to presentation by Equal Education. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee, for having us here. We welcome the opportunity to present our comments on the Division of Revenue Bill. My name is Pilile Ndombela-Masson, and this is my colleague, Nurina Ali, who is from the Equal Education Law Center, and this is our combined submission. Thank you. Okay, so the first thing that we need to, we've thought is that we've become deeply concerned about the downward adjustments to not only the national education budget, but also the baseline reductions made to the equitable share from which the provinces derive their education budgets. We've noted that from a national level, there's been a 6.93%, there was a 6.93% increase between the 2017-18 financial year and the 2018-19, but that is barely enough to keep up with all the needs. We note that there is a mammoth task ahead of undoing the stubborn legacy of apartheid education and addressing the various crises in education, and that what with VAT increasing and the fuel levy, there will also be service provision increases that will make education and the provision of an equal and quality basic education more expensive. The state of basic education as it stands, that there is crises upon crises with minimal funding. These crises include early grade reading proficiency, massive infrastructure backlogs, which are still not addressed even with the SCD program, school safety issues, particularly in the Western Cape, but also across the country, and the issue of scholar transport, which I know the committee discussed last week. One such issue that we have taken to note is an issue with the early grade reading proficiency. A study called the Progress in International Reading Literacy Studies shows that 78% of South Africa's grade 4s cannot read for meaning. What this means is that after four consecutive years of schooling, these grade 4s can see a text, note the words, but can't tell you what the text means or what the text is saying. So the chart that you see up there is from this early grade, Progress in International Reading Literacy Study, and what you can see is that the lowest performing all show remote, rural, small town, village, and township. The test is graded from 0 to 1,000, 1,000 being the best at reading and 0 being the poorest at reading. South Africa didn't even make it to the mid-mark, but we did hit the baseline, which is 400, just barely. As you can see, our most vulnerable economically, our most vulnerable learners are the ones that are actually not making it anywhere near the baseline for reading literacy. Now, the necessity for immediate interventions in situations like these and in other situations such as scholar transport and infrastructure are impossible without adequate funding, particularly in low income environments and rural areas where much of their budget for schools and for education is completely dependent on the department and on the provinces. Furthermore, South Africa has a growing school-age population, and we have high inflation rates and an ambitious NDP goal with regards to education. So spending on education should be notably increasing annually. However, allocations have been down revised since the MTBPS. And so this is the chart where we show what we saw as projections in the MTBPS and then what we actually, what education actually received. One such issue as well is the school infrastructures grants, which received its first deep cut since the promulgations of the minimum norms and standards for school infrastructure. Now, we note that from Treasury's side that the DBE and the Provincial Education Department consistently underspend from these allocations, but we do worry that slashing both grants by about 7 billion over the MTEF can't be a solution. These dangerous and undignified school structures have to be replaced, and so the cuts must be reversed, and rather than that, support should be given to the provinces to spend their allocation. We also feel that Treasury should intervene in some form and incentivize transparent and effective infrastructure planning. It must include the creation of stronger financial mechanisms to monitor and sanction implementing agents whom the Director General, in a recent testimony to Scopa, said that they were one of the biggest reasons for backlogs and for a lack of progress. So if these implementing agents are such a massive reason for backlogs and for not finishing projects and not spending allocations, surely then there should be measures taken rather than slashing the budget. In this regard, EES previously made recommendations to this effect of SCOA. They were sent through with our comments in case with regard to how Treasury could intervene in this situation, particularly in the Eastern Cape. And I guess one of our concerns is that has this been implemented, has it been noted, and what are the timelines with which it can be implemented? We also note that when school infrastructure allocations are reduced, it is the learners that suffer the most. Already the first norms and standards deadline was missed in 2016. 16 months thereafter, and learners across the country continue to go to schools made of asbestos, of mud, with inadequate sanitation. Learners are becoming sick because of this and so forth. Moreover, the 1% increase in VAT and the fuel levy increase will impact on the price of raw materials. And so we will have far less money to spend on increasingly expensive goods and services. We also have called for a conditional grant for learner transport, which I know we discussed last week, so I won't touch on it too much, but I will just go over it. Learners in Mutu who are members of Equal Education are known as equalizers. These equalizers have raised previously a lack of transport as a serious barrier to education. They traverse dangerous terrain and threatening situations, and some even drop out because of it. Now, EES consistently advocated for adequate funding for learner transport, including last week's presentation to SCOA and previous engagements with different committees and departments. And we do request a funding mechanism, which would include a conditional grant. Public comments and commitments have been made in this regard. The Minister of Basic Education, Angie Motshekga, made a commitment during her 2017 Council of Education Ministers speech, saying that she would consider some form of ring-fenced funding for for learner transport. Furthermore, the Director General of the DBE also said last year that if all goes according to plan, with discussions with National Treasury, a conditional grant will be introduced in the 2018-19 financial year. However, we are in that financial year, and so far we see nothing in this regard. There was a judgment at Pietermaritzburg High Court after the EELC and EE litigated against the KZN Department of Education. This was a great victory for learners in KZN because the judgment stated that the department would have to provide learner transport to all 12 of the schools that were part of the litigation. But with that being said, we note that it's not just these 12 schools in KZN that have an issue. This is a nationwide crisis, particularly in rural provinces. And so we asked the committee again with Treasury present that something needs to be done to help every one of these learners. And here we are asking the committee this again. Thank you. I'm now going to turn over to my colleague to speak on the revision of the equitable share formula. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Over to you. Please introduce yourself so that the members can be heard.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nareena Ali. I'm the Executive Director of Equal Education Law Center, which is a sister organization to Equal Education. And like Palile, I thank you for the opportunity to make these submissions. My aspect of the presentation is going to focus on the revision of the equitable share formula, which EE and ELC have previously presented to this committee on. Our main concerns have consistently been the failure of the formula to cater for the higher costs of delivering education in rural provinces particularly. And we note it has been encouraging and we welcome National Treasury's commitment to reviewing the equitable share formula. However, we are still waiting firm timeframes for the review process to be made public and the exact mechanisms of that public participation process. We also note, again and welcome, that the first phase of the review seems to be underway, including the change from the school's reality survey to the learner unit record information tracking system as being the basis upon which the data feeding into the formula is based. From National Treasury, we seem to learn that there are still some phases of the equitable share formula reviews that will be underway, and EE and ELC submit that that review must consider factors which contribute to the higher cost of rural education. These are factors such as historic underfunding of former homelands, smaller population densities, infrastructure disadvantage, age demographics, and poverty linked to rurality. Treasury has previously stated that Treasury will be exploring the possibility of adding rural-focused indicators to the provincial equitable share formula to strengthen the equity of intergovernmental transfers. And the explanatory memorandum to the Division of Revenue Bill states that Treasury is considering reviews as per the FFC recommendations, which again we welcome, and this is particularly in light of EE submissions on the score. We note that Equal Education and Equal Education Law Centre have also commissioned a report to be done on the mechanisms by which the equitable share formula could be adjusted to ensure more effective redress. And this report was presented last year to representatives of National Treasury along with provincial treasuries, which I should state was very much welcomed, and it was very encouraging to see that level of participation. The report included exploring ways in which the formula could be improved by investigating two options. The first was adjusting the provincial shares by the geographical factor, by a geographical factor that favors rurality, so increasing the weighting afforded to a certain rurality factor. And the second was adjusting the provincial share by a factor that takes into account the relative distribution of schools in each province across the five quintiles, so that's an income measure. In light of the commitment to review the equitable share formula, we would encourage National Treasury to continue to engage stakeholders in the process of the review, and particularly to provide firm timelines by which the review will be taking place and the exact mechanisms for public participation, so that EE and ELC as well as others can continue to contribute to the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the two presentations by the two ladies. Thank you once more for coming and for showing interest, but also for the input that you or the submission that you've made this morning. I will then open the floor for the interrogation of the presentation. The other alternative is that maybe we start with National Treasury responding to the issues raised, and then we then allow members to. Mm-hmm. Are you happy with that one, honourable members?
Yeah.
Okay. National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. If I have overlooked any of the issues, you can point them out to me. So the first one that I'm going to address is on the rationalization of, I guess, the reduction to conditional grants in the education sector. Specifically, a CD one. A CD, and I think you guys are quite well aware of the challenges that both the sector department and the biggest benefactor of, I mean, beneficiary of this grant have faced. But the grant has gone through a process, we are led to believe, by DPE, and is now at a point where they can actually hit the ground running with what they need to do. So there's been quite a huge amount of rationalization when it comes to the number of schools that were initially identified when this started. You know, people move, schools become unviable, and they merge with other schools. So the number of schools have been reduced when it comes to this, and the challenges when it comes to implementing ages, I believe, are being addressed at the moment. For that reason, after engagement with the department, we felt that the program wouldn't necessarily be derailed by reducing the allocations to this grant. That's the first issue on that. The second issue is on the equitable share formula. CE has indicated that we did engage with them last year. I'm not quite sure it was the gentleman who came to present to us. And the process is ongoing. In terms of what timeline and coming up with firm timelines, I think when we get to engaging with sector departments, we can't do this stuff. We don't create our own data because we're not the official custodian of data. So we need six departments to be involved. And that's the engagement that has to happen all the time in health, in education, in transport. So if that doesn't happen and they don't endorse certain things, we cannot proceed, right? Because we need them to endorse certain things. So that's been the challenge that we face on a number of things. But feels like now there's more interest and more commitment to actually moving the process on forward. In terms of the rural and urban tensions, and I guess depending on who you speak to, in our engagement with DBE, they acknowledge that there might be rural costs that are not explicitly accounted for in the equitable share. They also acknowledge that the actual cost per child, which also is driven by pure numbers, is also a driver. So we've been engaging with them as to if you had to then break down what are the costs structures of educating a child in Gauteng versus, what would that be? And that's an ongoing process as well. And until we have something concrete to engage the public on, we can't really be like, hey, let's engage. So we do like to solicit their advice and input, and then we engage with the sector department, and from there we have something to present to the public to engage on. On the rural, going on the rural and urban tensions as well, in education and health, we have solicited help from the FFC to drive that, piece of work for us, given that they are more an independent, referee when it comes to that, because they acknowledge that, yes, there will be rural tensions when it comes to the cost of doing certain things, but it's not just education. And equitable share is not just for education. It's for health, it's for roads, it's for a number of things. So how do you then juggle that and balance that in one, effectively a blunt allocation tool to address all these tensions between different sectors and within different different provinces? So yeah, so those are the inputs that I can give at this time. But as we do progress, we do extend to not just rural, we've also extended that invitation to rural health to present to us about what the challenges are around providing rural health services.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to welcome the report from the different stakeholders. But first of all, I would like to ask a question to Treasury. A lot of what is being highlighted by Equal Education, they have been highlighting it year in and year out. The issue of scholar transport, the issue of the CD program that is not effective, and a whole host of others, including the quintile system, which we felt was a problem because it disadvantaged those that are already disadvantaged if you're not in a disadvantaged area. That's the way I should explain it. What we are seem to not find is that Treasury doing something about it, because they have been repeatedly telling us this together with Treasury, and we have done nothing for the last couple of years to try and intervene to correct those. It's either we don't value the input from these stakeholders, or I don't know if we believe we know it all. But the end, if we say that this is valuable input, and like you've just alluded to, which I appreciate, why are we not paying attention to what they are saying? Because repeatedly they have been saying the same thing. That's the first thing. We note that there is a problem in terms of the reduction, and yes, indeed, it is a serious problem. But let us also be mindful that some of these are not effective. They're not spending the money. They're not spending them adequately. It's become a problem, which should really be a problem with Treasury, and that is why I think we have said as a committee that despite all the oversight mechanisms we got, and some of the best in the world, what we're lacking is implementation and consequence management. So yeah, that is a problem again. So should you not think that we should emphasize on having the right people doing the right job so that they can in fact produce the goods, because it doesn't at times seem to be the resources, because when the resources are available, we're not spending the resources. So before we even talk about getting more resources, we must be able to spend that which we have already been allocated to us. in the appropriate manner, and that which is what we seem to be facing. I'll tell you another problem that we experience there is, what is not infiltrating to us as this committee, Treasury, is getting to the root of who the culprits are. No matter how much we are asking, we are not getting that. We're getting general pictures of Department of Education didn't do this in that area, but we have repeatedly asked, give us the names so right down to the ground, so we can identify those people who are not performing, and if it means we must name and shame and do what we have to do. But we have to get them to perform. Because they are still, they're still getting their fantastic salaries every month. You understand? And they're not performing year in and year out. So for me, I think that is one of the serious problems in terms of that. For equal education, I don't know, I see you emphasizing on this, and I know what you're saying here is very important. In my understanding, how the kids impact at lower level up to grade 4 will decide what will happen in basic education, at tertiary institution. And that is why even at tertiary, you can see the dropouts and the failures we're having, because the quality of the education at a lower level is really a lot to be desired. I must be honest. I mean, we've gone and oversight this committee. And I'm sorry to say it, some of the educators I met, and I'm with due respect, were more child-minded than educators. And that is why, and I agree with you, more emphasis must be put on the rural areas. And yes, even when you're allocating budgets, correctly so, for those in those rural areas who need more attention, you should be allocating more. And where there's more schools, you should be allocating more. I personally believe that is common knowledge, but we're not practicing it accordingly. That is the difficulty. And I thank you for actually highlighting that for us, because then we can also emphasize in terms of that. Let me just see if there's something else that we know. The issue of the scholar transport that you spoke about, now we've had this argument before many a times, and we even, you know, I want to go further that you have not picked up other issues like sports development. 56.5 million South Africans can't win one soccer match, can't win one rugby match, can't win one cricket match. Really, where does it come from? Boils down from the ground. Because let me tell you, there is nothing happening in these schools, especially the poorest of the poor schools. We're just taking there, we're dumping there, just coming there to teach us for the sake of getting a job, and we're not going that extra mile. Now, we have repeatedly asked that sports and recreation, together with basic education, work in a coordinated fashion. Together with health, with all the effort the minister is putting in, wash your hands, do this. It's not happening. So we understand what you're saying. And maybe, I don't know, through the chair, we need to call in these relevant departments at some stage, sports and recreation, health department, together with basic education, and address these, with these role players there, as to what we are, the difficulties we are experiencing. That's why we can't see, enjoy the fruits of our hard labor here, because each one is working in silo. I'll stop there for now. I think I said a mouthful, Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Thank you very much. Just a few little comments. I think the concerns of equal education are noted. But I do want to just mention the fact that this division of revenue, of course, poses a lot of challenges, not just for basic education, but for all departments. But it's good that we have people who advocate for particular areas. First, the reality of available resources is one of the factors that we do need to keep in mind, that it's actually affecting everyone. And specifically, I would want to speak to the issue of the budget for school infrastructure, which is really a set. But so is the problem with all departments. If you look at the whole division of revenue, you'll see that the infrastructure budget across the board has been reduced. while we definitely agree with you that the school infrastructure, and we personally, or I think all of us would want really, because we've seen it with our own eyes, we do oversight, and the issue of school infrastructure is one of the biggest challenges we have. We have inadequate schools. We have the mud schools, like you have mentioned, in some provinces. We have schools that have got very small classrooms, which were built during the apartheid era, which were meant for smaller numbers of learners. And now with the number of learners that we have now, we have a big challenge, where even if, you know, I'll make an example with Gauteng, because that's the province I come from there. You find that the schools, and then the department will say schools must at least accommodate up to this number per class. But the sizes of the classes are just not adequate. Even if the department can say put 40, up to 43, because that is one number that has been that has been used quite often this particular academic year. But classrooms are just not able to accommodate. And there are not enough schools across the board. But then the other thing is that you've also mentioned that for quite some time, the infrastructure budget has been underspent. And what is your take on that? Do you think that if we're underspending on the infrastructure budget, what should be done? I don't expect you to be the only one that really answers that, but that is one question we need to also ask. If the budget is underspent and the resources are in the state, the available resources are in the state in which they are, what exactly should we do? Should we continue pumping resources there, or what is it that we need to attend to? Because I'm just thinking that maybe we should look at why, in spite of all the existing needs, the budgets are underspent. Because then keeping on giving them money when they're not spending them may not be one of the, especially now that we've got these trade-offs that we have to put in place to say, okay, here they're not spending, so might as well. But across the board, we must just bear that in mind, that the infrastructure budget has been reduced, which is a real pity for everybody. And then, in terms of the social package, I also would want to say that, you know, I'm a self-appointed advocate for rural services because I think I've seen that really, like you have mentioned, the rural learners, they don't have all the things that you've mentioned, like the scholar transport, it's a crisis. They still walk long distances, like no changes have come about in the country. They walk long distances, they don't have adequate schools, and the schools are not equipped, and so on, all those things. So that thing, I really do want to endorse it also, that the rural learners need to be a special project. They need to be targeted in a particular way. But again, we need to also look at the component of availability of resources, and hoping that it may not necessarily be the case throughout, but this particular financial year, I see us really having a big problem in terms of the budget. With the current debt that the country has got, with the economy doing what it is doing, and we not getting anywhere with the economy, but there is positivity in that maybe it's picking up a bit. Let's hope it continues picking up. And then, of course, you've mentioned the commitments that people made, the departments and all that, that we may not necessarily be able to answer, but I think it's some things that need to. But there's somewhere also that I was just looking at that if things go according to plan. So perhaps whoever the DG will say things did not go according to plan. So I'm just saying that they will say it didn't go according to plan because of 1, 2, 3. But this should not discourage us. We need to actually continue engaging and trying to move forward with the, advocating for what we see as wrong, because all other departments are doing exactly what we're doing. So So at the end of the day, is the development of basic education, and then health will come and say something else, because we deal with all departments. But I really think we are doing a lot of good work, and I hope it bears fruit. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for your intervention. Any other intervention? Well, on the 78% of South Africa's grade 4 learners that cannot read for meaning, I would like to find out from Equal Education and National Treasury on what is your view in the root. What is your view as far as the root cause of this is concerned, and what are the interventions that we can consider as Parliament? What do you think is the cause, and how can we intervene to, you know, bring a turnaround in this area of want or of need? It's an area of need. But also, what in the view of Equal Education and also National Treasury are main bottlenecks to the effective school infrastructure delivery in the Eastern Cape? And what interventions can be done in the short term and in the medium term to long term? To us as committee, this is critical given the significant backlog in the Eastern Cape. But also, how can we effectively deal with non-performing implementing agents? And also, how can we empower emerging implementing agents, in your view, and still ensure effective and efficient delivery of infrastructure? I will then hand over. Honourable Member Banana.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join those who welcome the presentation. Coming back to the very same issue that you raised earlier on, of those learners in grade 4 who can't read, for the meaning, we have suggested that the Department of Education needs to expand the 8th grade reading study. Maybe if you can just clarify that. What is it? With regards to the ASIDA, we are hearing you that the money needs to be taken back. But if really they are failing to build those schools, what is your suggestion? Because I remember one time Minister of Health presented himself to this committee where he was requesting that the people who are failing them is the implementing agent, for most of the buildings that are taking place are done by Department of Public Works. And they are the ones who are really failing them. And he was requesting that if this matter can be taken up so that health can do on its own, maybe we can subtract it. What do you think about education? Do you think education can do better without the implementing agent? Because really, in most of the cases I know, even in building of libraries, it was the implementing agent that was failing that department. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you may, respond.
Thank you so much for all those questions and comments. I'm just going to try and get them in order, but
First and foremost, to Honourable Manana, thank you for asking about the early grade reading study. In the submission that we sent, we actually have an external link discussing this issue. But one such of the issues is that the DVE plan for this was to have daily lesson plans with reading material, centralized training for teachers, daily lesson plans, and weekly meetings with parents to ensure that learners are keeping up their reading even at home and such things. Another issue would be language of teaching and learning. You know, if you're a rural child in KZN and you're coming to school and getting your lessons in English completely with reading, is that helping you? Is that not? Should you be learning in your mother tongue and incrementally becoming exposed to, you know, your future language of teaching and learning? It's issues like that that make up the early grade reading study. If the committee would prefer, I would send out something, but it's basically just a general intervention into helping young learners become equipped to reading, because from grade R to grade 3, they're learning to read, and from grade 4, they have to read to learn. There's a switch that happens, and what happens is that if they're not empowered in the first three years, then they get to grade 4 and we have issues like this. So these interventions are obviously very, very important, and they obviously require funding, particularly in low-income schools. And I think the other question you had was with a CD, which I'll answer with everybody else's. So one of the issues, they said, what is the lack of the progress in the Eastern Cape and with regards to a CD and what can be done? In the email that I sent with our submission was a document called Equal Education's Recommendations to SCOA, where we discussed the role of Treasury and list a few ways. So one of the recommendations we've made is that while Treasury already exercises oversight function over spending of conditional grants and can intervene in provinces that are under-resourced or under-capacitated, such as the Eastern Cape, can also make more functional interventions by enacting the following: by assisting the provincial education departments to properly spend and not waste the funds allocated to hire qualified professionals in the infrastructure unit of each province through the human resources capacitation pilot, specifically within their supply chain management function. We've also asked for them to train the infrastructure units of how to use this SIPDM, which would facilitate proper and detailed infrastructure planning. And I think it's, as the chair said, you know, you can have, I think it was the chair or was it Honourable Imam who said, if you have the money but you don't have the right people or the equipped people, then you still have an issue with not spending. And I think that's something that, you know, we've spoken about as well as the organisation extensively, to say, if we get the funds, that's the first step, but then the next step is how do you train everybody to use the funds effectively? If we don't, then we'll have the same issue. But what we've noted repeatedly is that the funds are either given or the funds are taken away. What needs to happen is that they need to be empowered to use the funds. So what are the interventions that are coming through from Treasury, from the National Department to the provinces to equip them? You know, the Eastern Cape is a massive site of backlog. And with a province like that, you would obviously need to ensure that people are equipped to note the scope of the need and then how to address it systematically. And if we don't have that, if we don't have the funds and the proper equipping of the staff, then we have what we have today, which is that, you know, there's a backlog and money's been taken away. Another one is, how do we deal with non-performing IAs? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that, and I know that the lady from Treasury did say that Treasury, you know, at the DBE has discussed that they're planning on issues, and I think that's something that we would like more clarity on, if possible. What is the intervention that is happening with regards to implementing agents from Treasury's side? I know that the department is not present, but we do try to engage them on these things as well to know what is actually happening to ensure that these implementing agents aren't holding back construction and aren't holding back fixing of backlogs, because often we hear something will be done. And I think the SCOPA hearing for us and for me personally was a moment of concern, because even in that hearing we got told that you know, something will be done to ensure that these implementing agents don't hold us back, and yet we're not seeing the plans. They're not made public. Are the plans of what's going to happen to the implementing agents available publicly? Is there some form of participation where stakeholders, learners, teachers, parents can say, yes, we agree, we disagree, this won't help, this will help? I think there's a process there that needs to be considered. And I think that covered, unless I'm not, but yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, you may come in.
Thank you for all the questions and some of the very insightful comments. It's really encouraging for us to hear the alignment with the concerns that we've been having for years now. I want to touch on just two points. The first is about the review of the equitable share formula and the process. I think our main point here is that we really encourage transparency and proactive engagement wherever possible because we're really trying to be helpful. We think that this is a very positive development. We want to contribute as productively as we can to that process. And so, for example, it's very positive to hear that the cost per child is now going to be taken into account, or at least there's some exploration into what the cost of educating children in urban versus rural areas are. And we would appreciate if that information could be made available, or there's some mechanism by which we can actually interrogate and also contribute to that sort of information gathering. It would also be useful to get feedback on the recommendations that we made last year. The FFC has picked up on the point of potentially looking at weighted socioeconomic profiles of learners as part of the formula, which is a factor that we also have said can be considered or as one of the ways in which we can relook at the formula. And so being able to contribute to the thinking around that could be very useful. But I think overall, just the idea of ensuring that along this process, which we recognize and understand is a complex one, we're always incorporating as many voices and stakeholders as we possibly can. In relation to the comments that were made, and some of them quite emotional about this ongoing crisis and failure, particularly in school infrastructure provisioning, but in so many other issues. I think it's not easy to be able to provide one reason. I think there are many contributing factors, but one of the core contributing factors that we're finding is the real failure of intergovernmental cooperation at every level and how that's impacting on various issues in education. And I'll use the infrastructure case as an example. As you may be aware, Equal Education is actually going to be in court tomorrow in the Eastern Cape, exactly on the question of school infrastructure. And the aim of that case is not to secure immediate implementation of the norms and standards for school infrastructure, but to actually fix the norms. Because currently what we have is a legal framework that allows for actors to pass the buck and blame on each other and effectively say that if we don't meet the targets for school infrastructure provisioning, nobody can be held accountable. And so what Equal Education will be hoping to achieve in this case is simply, it's quite a simple, it's not a very unreasonable demand, to have a legal framework that makes it very clear who can be held accountable and that we can't simply say that because some other actor didn't complete the work that they went to do, that means that children will end up with no infrastructure and not have sufficient toilets and not have sufficient electricity and not have water in their schools. So I think that may be one of the core issues that we need to grapple with in trying to ensure that at all levels we're effectively ensuring education provisioning that meets the needs of learners across the country and particularly in rural areas. I'll leave it there.
Thank you. National Treasury.
Thank you, Jane. Sorry, I was running back and forth. I have a battery issue. But let me start with the delivery of infrastructure when it comes to schools. I think we need to probably take a step back and differentiate between the backlog grant as well as the education infrastructure grant. The education infrastructure grant is a direct grant to provinces, and that goes straight to provinces, oversight here still by the sector department, to ensure that they deliver current and future needs for schooling. The backlog grant is purely just that, to clear the backlog, and that is an indirect grant run by the Department of Education, of Basic Education. While we're taking a step back, we need to understand that there are different roles that each department plays. Treasury plays an oversight role when it comes to implementing, and I mean, especially in this case of the CD, when it comes to implementing, that lies squarely with Department of Education. So when it comes to design of contracts, monitoring of implementing agents, norms and setting up norms and standards, that lies with the department. And I think I'll be clear to make sure that we're not overstepping where we start and end and DBE starts and end. So I think it's, and I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to abscond from responsibility on National Treasury side. And as we said to the committee last week, that the OCPO can help with things like contract management and how to design that, can help with the monitoring of how to monitor and ensure that you deliver at the right time. They can help with that. But in terms of like actually the selection of the implementing agents, that is not our in our purview to actually carry out. That's something that we can do alongside DBE. So that's the one thing. In terms of support when it comes to infrastructure, infrastructure needs, there's something called the IDIP that National Treasury has been running with for the last 10 years. If I'm not just trying to find what that acronym stands for, it is Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program. And we realized that it wasn't a matter of there's no money for infrastructure, but rather that how people deliver infrastructure and understanding what you need to do at what time to make sure that you're ready for the next step was lacking. And that was something that we started 10 years ago. It was extended to provinces, something that actually Treasury paid for the hiring of engineers, extending of long-term assistance to provinces and the infrastructure units was something that has been going on for the last 10 years. And we've seen the results of that. So within the education infrastructure grant, for example, as part of this program, we introduced an incentive component when it comes to planning of infrastructure, planned infrastructure, because we realized that planning was one of the things we were failing. And we've seen that when we first started with incentive component, very few provinces were actually qualifying for that. The last year, only one province failed to qualify when it comes to the incentive program. So we see that we actually, there's some improvement when it comes to planning of infrastructure delivery. However, in terms of the support that was given for the infrastructure unit at provincial level, so extending long-term assistance, extending assistance of engineers, that is something that you hope that you build the capacity for then the provinces to run with that. We at that state that we hope that we've put in the system, that we hope that's gained enough traction that provinces can run with that. And we're seeing it already in the EIG and the health facility revive grant. So there's something else that I want to mention on that unit. And provinces have actually come to the party, they've actually submitted the organogram for their infrastructure units. Some more than others have noticed, amalgamated infrastructure units, not just for education, but looking at health infrastructure as well. So looking at ways to deliver infrastructure across province, not just within one sector. But again, funding becomes an issue. So when it comes to, especially when budgets are under pressure, do we fill the entire organogram, or do we fill some key organograms with what provinces are now having to deal with, because the ID program is now coming to an end. So the part where Treasury actually pays for the exam, experts is phasing out by the end of 2018-19. I stand to be correct on that one. So that's that on the destruction unit. In terms of when it comes to, I think, I'm not sure what the lady's name is, but I think you mentioned something about responses to your recommendation. So when we get recommendations from the committee, we always respond. we unfortunately cannot respond directly to NGOs and CSOs because we have our obligation is to the committee. So anything that comes through the committee, we always respond to. So if you would like for us to respond to your recommendation, it has to be something that the committee recommends and agrees with you on so that we can then submit the recommendations and responses back to the committee. I'm not sure if there's anything else that I've left out. Oh, I think there was mention of some of the root causes for the 78% of British Poor learners not being able to read for meaning. On that, Chair, I honestly cannot comment as to what our view is on that. I haven't engaged with that report, so I don't actually know. And also, I'm not the person responsible for basic education within Treasury, so that's it's very... I mean, I'll not engage with any of the report as well. Bottlenecks, I think, in delivering Eastern Cape. I think I sort of touched on that. I think I... Anything else that I've left, Chair?
Mr. Chair, for honourable members, are all your all the issues that you raised responded to? Are there any follow-up questions? Honourable member Imam?
Sorry, Chair, I had to run out urgently, but I'm not sure if it was responded to, but if I understood the last part from Treasury now is that they will respond if it comes via the committee. And I think what a lot of what was alluded to by Equal Education, they have previously made recommendations to us and things. And it's via this committee that we did to Treasury. And that's what the argument I'm trying to put forward is that despite doing it via the correct processes, those specific issues are not getting the deserved attention so that we can correct those things. So, while they might communicate directly with Treasury, but they've always done their presentations to us here, which we put in our reports, and we've also done it to Treasury in terms of these things, like the Quintal system. It has been repeatedly spoken about that it doesn't work in some of the areas, because who says there's no poor children in a school in Manenberg, for that matter, which might not fall under a non-school free area? Who says it doesn't? And I guarantee you there are plenty of them. And they are being deprived of that because they fall in the wrong area. And I don't know, we also agreed at one stage that we need to even look at that system, even in the rural areas, because I know of a particular area in Tsitsikamma. Nobody works in that entire area, I can tell you. Nobody. But that school is not one of them that falls under, so I don't even know how they really work out, that the rationale behind that. So I think what is important is that this input that is coming through to us, and when we send it back through to Treasury and things like that, and this is debated extensively, we bring these things up all the time, it's not getting the desired attention and response so that we could say, listen, there is a problem, let us find a solution to it, because otherwise I can tell you Equal Education, Treasury is going to come here every year and tell us exactly the same thing, and they'll tell you. I think there's nothing new you told us, to be honest with you. I think what the only new thing I've heard from you today is about that grade 4. That's it. Everything else I've heard many times before. And I'm saying then what is the purpose of this input, valuable input, if we're not going to work on that. The SCD program was another one where we went as an oversight, this committee, and found two schools, 78 million and 82 million, standing while the owners are enjoying themselves in the plush offices in Sandton with no money to buy material, nothing at all. In fact, again, that's a Treasury fault. Can I tell you why? Let me be very clear about it. That you qualify for a contract based on your grading and what capacity you have to do that. But now when you go and give two contracts simultaneously for that value, it's no more you judging them on the one. You're judging them on one individual contract. In the meantime, you need to look at it accumulated now, because now it's no more an 80 million rand contract, it's 160 million. And do they have the capacity? And we found that they didn't. But we've done nothing about that. So can you see the weaknesses that we found? And we're not doing anything about addressing it. They've addressed previously on their CD, we went and saw that. And we came back and gave an input on our oversight and whatever it is. It's not happening. that quality of education that we're talking about when equal education is talking about up to grade 4. We went and saw that. We saw a brand spanking new school that your CD program has put in place. And what? The little boys and girls use the same toilet with no door. And I'll tell you what the answer we got. No, the teacher takes them to the toilet. Can a teacher take 40 children a day? She'll be spending all the time going to the toilet with the children. So it's not working because I don't think we're giving the attention. Now, organizations like Equal Education are going out and doing our work, which we should be doing. They're picking it up, they're coming back. And that guidance and that research that they're doing is, purpose of that is so that we can make a difference. And that's why I think maybe together with Treasury, we need to find a way about dealing with this so that when there's a problem, and there are many, but there are many successes, let's take each problem, find a solution once and for all, and it does not have to repeat itself. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you so much for the comments, and I know that you also came up with recommendations on if you could be so specific on what you think needs to be done so that you can include those in our recommendations, because I mean, you are out there and you have information in your industry. What is that you think? Here, I see you also are making a recommendation. National Treasury should review regulations on management fees. I also National Treasury establishes guidelines which heads of departments in provincial education departments must use before allocating projects to implementing agents. Yeah, I think these are the recommendations that we will also look at as a college. Yeah? And then look at how it is that we can include in our recommendations so that they can fire the house and become resolution. Now, National Treasury, when you respond, I don't know if you would also be able to respond to one of us, it should be a good job on what can we recommend to do that water and sanitation in schools?
It's a mess.
What water and sanitation in schools is trying to either increase the level of the school, that's what it means to do.
I heard one of the presenters talking about these kids who can't read at grade 4, saying they need to be assisted at home by parents. I don't know what can we do that, because I know majority of these young parents, they are not active participant when it comes to the education of their kids. You know, I attended a governing body meeting where they were supposed to elect a new governing body. To my surprise, parents were not there. Out of a school of 1,000 kids, according to the criteria from education, they need to be a quarter of those parents in order to have a governing body. So if it is 1,000, they were expecting 200. But even then, they were not there. So if they don't take these issues very seriously, do you think a child or a learner, when he or she is at home, do you think that parent's going to take care of them?
And what can we do so that we make it a point that if you are a parent, you need to be involved in the education of your kids.
Sorry, can I follow? Thank you, Chair. You know, something just came to mind. Two things. One is, Chair just spoke about water and sanitation, and I want to give you an example of what we found. You built, and this is your CD program, built a brand beautiful nutrition center. But where is the taps for the children to wash their hands? Right down in the ditch. That's what we saw. Now, when that siren goes, how many of those children are going to run from that classroom down that bank to that ditch to go and wash their hands before they come back to the top to come and eat? Now, for me, my understanding is that whoever is rolling out this program, this CD, they must have knowledge of these little things, and they're not doing that. Now, I'll go one step further, and this is very important. And I don't think anybody can deny that the quality of education, especially in the rural areas, is substandard. Let's be honest. Maybe you're not attracting the right people because of it, the rural locations and whatever it is. Then maybe we need to suggest to government at some stage that wherever there are schools in those areas, we need to do what we've done before. Try to arrange housing for quality teachers that might relocate from urban areas or other areas to go there. But the emphasis must be on providing that quality education. We can't deprive them because you can't attract them from that particular area. That's the next thing maybe we should be suggesting. Let's put up accommodation in those rural areas so that when people move, it don't divide their families. They'll go as families, you understand? But they will be able, and you'll get the right kind of people. Because let me tell you, there's many of them that you speak to today, qualified, can't find a job. And they won't go there because where are they going to stay? What are they going to do? So some of the suggestions I think we should be making if we want to radically transform the lives of the poorest of the poor. That's one of the ways. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, I don't know if you have responses. Let's start with them and then we end up with National Treasure.
Chair, can I
comment? Okay, Honourable Member Stupanyane.
No, thank you very much. Something that I actually wanted to just comment on. In terms of provinces, perhaps if you ever engage with the provinces to check, I don't know if you...
Are you listening? Because she's speaking and you may...
No, I just wanted to get a sense of whether you are actually also engaging with provinces. Because I'm just thinking that the equitable share goes to provinces and the national treasury doesn't necessarily instruct them on what to use money on. And if you have a picture of what the provinces are actually doing in terms of allocating their own provincial budgets in this regard, because you may find that some will allocate. And then you did mention the issue of capacity. Do you find perhaps sometimes challenges of capacity in the provinces?
Thank you so much for the question again. Okay, so I'll leave the question about water and sanitation to my colleague because she can speak more to it. However, with regards to learning at home, and the different implementation foresights for the infrastructure programs, I think that it's one thing that I've noted in this committee today in this public hearing is the issue of working in silos between departments. I think that when we attend the Committee on Education and they engage the DBE, there's always something being said about we're not getting this, so we need that. And then we're now in engagement in these National Treasury and they're making their case. And I think it becomes an issue when you don't have almost a unified idea of what needs to happen to go forward. And the issue of working in silos seems to be a massive problem. For example, with with, you know, learning at home or ensuring that learners are equipped, what are the different ways that we can equip parents? Because parents in low-income areas, you know, they have a much more, they have a heavier burden because obviously they have, you know, they're working-class parents and they get home, let's say, for example, and they're tired and now they have to come do this. And so there's issues around that that need to be addressed, of course. I don't think I can necessarily speak to that because this is a DBE program that I was reading out to you, and Equal Education hasn't necessarily made enough submissions to that. But I do think that with regards to how we engage these questions, we would prefer it if, you know, people that came up with them are here to speak on them. With the case of four sides of implementation, I think the norms and standards as they are can make a lot of suggestions of how things need to be done, but my colleague will speak on that to ensure that we actually have a fuller sense. Whether we're engaging with provinces, we do actually make engagement with provinces because our campaigns are usually nationally or provincially or locally based. So what that means is the process of scholar transport, for example, has its nucleus is in KZN because that's where we found the massive amount of needs. In that case, we do engage the provincial legislature, we engage the provincial departments of transport and education. And so we are actually going through the different spheres of governance, but obviously in this case, we are speaking to the Standing Committee on Appropriations and National Treasury, but in a different sense, we will also engage the provincial, hence the litigation in KZN now after massive engagements that were fruitless. And so what we do is we speak to each level, if that covers me. Thank you.
Up on the water and sanitation point, when the minimum uniform norms and standards for school infrastructure was published in 2013, it set very clear deadlines for when schools should expect a regular water supply, electricity, sanitation. And by 2016, we still had more than 9,000 schools with pit latrines. And of that, more than 4,000 schools, that was the only form of sanitation. And if we look at the uniform norms and standards, it's one of the difficulties is that the government has sought to interpret it as, or the departments of education and other relevant departments, as guidelines rather than as binding regulations, rather than as binding obligations. So we do have a framework, and the framework should be providing some level of accountability. And what we're hoping to achieve through the case in the Eastern Cape is to ensure that there can't be an attempt to rely on loopholes or to interpret the law so that it's more flexible, it's just about prioritization rather than firm obligation. So I think a part of it is we can see that there has been some improvement. So since the norms came into effect, we have seen some notable improvement in the number of schools that now have water that didn't have water before, that now have electricity that didn't have electricity before. So if the law is treated seriously, we will see improvements. But one of the difficulties is at the moment it's being seen as kind of a loose framework rather than a binding set of obligations. And I think the more actors or the more stakeholders that hold the departments accountable to that framework, the more we'll see in terms of delivery.
Thank you, Chair. There was something I wanted to pick up, but I think I've lost in somewhere here. But just to respond to Honourable Imran, I think, please forgive me if I'm saying it wrong. I understand your frustration. I think my superiors lost. Express that to Chair that when it comes to what you're saying about going to schools and saying that they've moved the tab from where the kids are, that's something that Treasury would probably never pick up. But DBE should pick that up because DBE should have standards around how far a tab should be from where kids eat. I guess around what you're saying about norms and standards, we don't set norms and standards for sectors. We do want to make sure that when those things are set, they actually, they are stuck to and they guide, they actually are the only rules that should apply when it comes to delivery of services. How we then include that in possibly the framework around, I mean, the conditional grant frameworks for the delivery of schools when it comes to CDSA or even EIG, that's something we can certainly look into and would, you know, welcome input on how we can then write that in. Or maybe, you know, the office of the OPPO, how they can use their contract managing management in terms of instruction of the issue, that's something we can look into. For the actual location of that, that's where the accountability of Treasury will probably end, and that of DBU would have to start. And we had suggested to the committee that maybe when it comes to, you know, we invite equal education or we invite rural health, that the separate departments also accompany Treasury. So that's not like we're the only ones hearing it. And even when we do communicate it, it's not like Treasury is the one communicating it, but rather it's coming from a parliamentary committee. So that's the first thing I want to say.
Sorry, Chair, can I have a follow-up on that particular one? On that particular comment, sir? Thank you. I'm not going to agree. You know, the school only belongs to the Department of Basic Education once it is handed over. I'm talking about when a CD takes on this project and goes and builds that school. This problem of building the toilet, and I'm not talking about removing a toilet, I'm talking about building a toilet. You built an entire school for 50 or 60 or 70 million rand. This is where you built your nutrition center, and then you're going and building the toilet miles away. Now, for me, it's not a problem of basic education, it's a problem created before it went to basic education. Basic education is only responsible for the education of that thing. Even the building is not the mandate of the basic education, if I understand it. So it falls under public works, if I understand it correctly. The building itself, it doesn't fall under basic education. But what I'm saying is that you got a special program or project which is run by a CD in terms of the school's infrastructure. They are the ones that's creating the problem, because they should have known and understood that you're building a school, you're putting this nutrition center here, but you're building the toilet miles away. You have got toilets here with no doors. You are building that with the toilet for girls and boys, and you know what happens in society today. And you're building schools with no doors for the toilets, and both male and female must use the same thing. So it's not a basic education problem. It's before it gets there. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to respond?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so I understand that as CD sits with DBE, that money goes directly to DBE. Whoever the implementing agent is irrelevant. At least that's my understanding of it. It could be public works. In Eastern Cape, it's not just public works. They actually have other implementing agents. How they guide those implementing agents into what they need and what should be delivered before it goes onto their asset register and then subsequently goes to the provincial asset register is where I think we need to, I guess, understand and figure out whose responsibility is what. When DBE sets number standards of what they require the schools to be, if public works is delivering that for them, it should be clear that this is what they require, otherwise then it's not meeting their standards of what they consider as adequate education environment for schools. That, I mean, I stand to be corrected, but that's my understanding of where it's falling. If, however, when it comes to the management of that contract and the payment of implementing it is not happening and we can intervene on that, I think we should engage on that. But the actual location of where the water and sanitation should be, how far it should be from nutrition program, I don't think that's where Treasury's role should be. And if it is, if you believe that that's where our role should be, I would certainly welcome how you think we should intervene in those roles and exactly what instruction we can give to the ICT program to say, and to the ICT program to say, this is where you need to build water and sanitation, washing of hands, where you're having feeding. I'm welcome to.
Chair, can I get some clarity on that, sir? Chair? I just want us to understand it correctly. Chair, what through you, is it okay? Then tell me what is the need for Equal Education to come and talk to Treasury and brief us. It's not necessary if that is the case. Because let me tell you, I know that your mandate is more of a financial, it's a different, I'm not arguing about that. But what I'm saying is this, that a CD is now responsible for building those schools. Okay? The CD project that you've got, they are basically taking the responsibility of ensuring that this infrastructure is done. clearly it shows that they either do not have the expertise or the knowledge or the understanding of what these schools need. Now my question is, we're building a 78 million rand school, which does not, and another one, when we ask them in terms of what I understand is that each school is supposed to now be an ideal school. We ask them, where's the sports field? They say, no, we couldn't put one here because the terrain is this. Then why did you put the school there? Why didn't you put it 100 meters away? Or why didn't you have the sports field 100 meters away? It's an exercise alone for the children to go there. So what I'm trying to get at is, I'm not sure, and you found the weaknesses that Equal Education are talking about in their CD thing. I'm not sure whether these people have the absolute expertise and the knowledge and the understanding of what is required. All I know that is that we are spending the money and then finding out we don't have this, we don't have that, we don't have that. So that's why I want to know. And the fact that they're expressing that, via this committee we've expressed that to Treasury as well. What measures can we put in place to ensure? Because I don't expect you to go and get basically involved in the issue of the water. No, I don't expect you to do that. But what measures can we put in place to ensure that we're getting that value for money? Because really we're not here. Thank you.
Well, some of the issues that are raised, I would say they are comments, but for National Treasury to also take home, because National Treasury is a guest today. I think their interest was to hear the angle put by Equal Education, so that I'm sure in their consideration of the budget, they also take that into consideration. But what has come up strongly from this presentation is also, they touched on the FSC recommendations on possibility of adding rural focus indicators to the provincial equitable share formula. So we'll be happy if National Treasury can look into that. And then National, of course, Equal Education also spoke about the water and sanitation norms and standards that were introduced in 2013. And their concern is that this is just a loose framework. They would like something that will regulate or be obligatory, you know, to the departments, provincial departments, so that indeed they then act according to that obligation, or they find themselves obliged to allocate a budget for and make sure that they. Because there is an RCD budget, which is a budget set aside to address the backlogs at the schools. Okay. I don't know if there are other issues that you'd want to add before we close this. Okay, Treasury.
Thank you. So I was going to respond to what Equal Education has mentioned about what FFC said about looking at some kind of needs-weighted way of addressing inclusion. We've engaged with them on that. This entire review process, we don't run alone. We run it with, we just happen to be, I guess, the central point where it happens. But we FFC is there, Parliamentary Commission, they make it to all the meetings. The reason why they run it with the Rural Colloquium is because they actually said, hey, we can run this for you. But they did acknowledge that for what we need, so the question, one of the questions that came up around, can we make our education subsidy effectively follow the child to follow the quintile? It's like, that's the ideal, that's where we like to get to. But what we need in terms of data to do that, we don't currently have. So how do we progress towards that? So that's a discussion that we always have, because we know that the quintile system is not perfect. But the question is, given what we have now, what can we do and how can we move towards that? And the indication that EBE has given us is that with the LURA system, it makes for easier tracking of a child, regardless of where they are. And once they're captured in the system, then it's easier for the subsidy to then follow the child. The, I mean, it's a new system, the teething problems, duplicates take a while to clean out of the system. So those are things that we are looking at, knowing that quintile is not ideal. What is the best way to get the subsidy for education to follow the child, as opposed to follow an area? I think that's what I wanted to say on that. Yeah.
Right, honourable member.
Madam Chair, something has come up, I've got to run. But for your next point, when you need quorum, you can note my acceptance of the minutes, etc. I'm sorry, I've got to run.
Yeah, I could have gone to prepare my debate.
We were supposed to also, after this engagement, supposed to look at the minutes, consider the minutes, but then we took home a forum, but it so happens that we don't have the minutes, am I right?
Mm.
Okay, shall we then defer that to tomorrow?
Mm.
Where will we be considering the report? Mr. Honourable Member Topham will appreciate if he can come tomorrow, because we have to look at our own report.
I'm flying back now and I'm flying back tomorrow.
That's fine. I know you'll make it.
I'll be there.
Okay, thanks. Bye bye.
Sorry.
All right. So tomorrow we'll be looking at the report, but also we will also be looking at, we'll be considering the minutes. The outstanding minutes of the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th of March. That's how hard you are working. Let's consider those minutes, adopt them, and then put them away, and then continue or focus on the new work that is brought before us. So tomorrow I'll need everybody to be here so that we can form a quorum for the minutes and for the report. But also the report will be circulated. We're just waiting for this one presentation. The report will be circulated this afternoon. I'll request members to just look at the report. Can you focus more on the recommendations, because we've got to make recommendations that will make an impact in our work, not for the sake of making recommendations. So please scrutinize the recommendations that have been put forth coming from all our engagements with regards to the DOT. And then tomorrow we will then adopt the report. And on Thursday, we will be debating the report, and the debate will be at 10 in the morning.
10.
There's a special request made by the Chief Whip's office. I'm sure they will then, there's a way, there's a procedure to be followed to change the rules in the House.
There's no plan any in the afternoon.
So on Thursday, 10 o'clock, we will be debating. Then there will be you will debate our report, but there will also be a debate on the international rules.
There's no plan any in the afternoon.
Human Rights Day. Okay. Those are the announcements, and we don't have any correspondence. And then, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Indeed, you do come. From the time I joined this committee, you always make sure that you,
are we done?
You make submissions. And thank you for playing your advocacy role for the people out there.
Darren.
Otherwise, the meeting stands adjourned.
Done. I don't know what paper is on about.
Oh my God.
I'm